What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Gridiron Podcast. It is episode 18. Can't believe that we are already here. We're almost a year and a half into the Gridiron Podcast. As always, I'm Nick.
Michael.
And today we are going to be talking about some of the craziest things that happened this past week in the NFL. And just take a deep dive into some of these games. So let's get started. All right. So the first game that we're going to talk about is the NFC West matchup between the Rams and the 49ers. Rams are starting to look pretty good. Obviously, last week, beating the Bills 44-42, and then coming out and pretty much just mopping the floor with the 49ers.
Yeah, I mean, this game kind of just said more about the 49ers than the Rams, if anything. I mean, their season's over. I mean, let's just put it bluntly. They are 6-8 now. Let's just go back into the timeline of the 49ers season, yeah. Right? I mean, starting off with like the injuries, right? You know, Christian McCaffrey, Brock Purdy, Debo, Brandon Ayuk, right? And then you go into like some of the other offseason stuff, like the contract situations, Debo, Sam, or Brandon Ayuk, right? Trent Williams. And then you go into like other factors like Ricky Pearsall getting shot. I mean, totally unfortunate. Glad he's able to play now, right?
Yeah.
And there's also some other drama like Devondre Campbell, who I'm disappointed in because, you know, he's a former Packer and he's refusing to play this game. So there's just a bunch of like things going on within this organization, which just led to the downhill of this team. And, you know, at the beginning of this, season, you know, we both did say like the 49ers were not the same team.
Right.
And there was just so many components going into the season. So to see this, I'm not really shocked. Are you shocked by any means?
Obviously I knew like it wasn't going to be the same team, but to see this much of a downfall is definitely surprising in my opinion. So in that aspect, I am surprised, but to see like when they were healthy, like once they had like Christian McCaffrey back, obviously Ayuk out for the season, that's pretty unfortunate. He was on pace to be a top receiver in the league. Obviously last year he was one of those guys that was one of the top receivers, but you look at it into a whole aspect of the 49ers, obviously going in, we were like, okay, maybe they might be a wild card team, right? We weren't saying they weren't. We obviously thought that we were going to see a different NFC West champion this year, right? With, I mean, the Seahawks starting off hot. We saw like the Cardinals obviously drafting Marvin Harrison Jr. And even the Rams, I mean, kind of like they were able to pick it up towards the end of the season last year. But to see this sort of downfall from the 49ers is unbelievable. And now you got to think going into this next offseason, you potentially have Christian McCaffrey's contract needing to be extended, Brock Purdy, even like now, like Debo Samuel, because Ayuk was the main focus of the wide receiver room this past year. Now it's going to be Debo. Like, what are you going to do with Debo? So we'll have to see, but obviously I do agree with you that their season is over at 6-8. Yes, they do have more games coming up, obviously against a banged up Lions team coming up. As we saw this past week, they were kind of banged up. We'll talk about that later in the episode, but to see sort of this team being like a roller coaster, having really good games, then really bad games, it's interesting to see what they do coming into this offseason, because I don't think there's any shot that they make the playoffs.
Yeah. You mentioned a good point there of the off season. I want to ask you, what do you think that they do with Brock Purdy? Because he has one more year left on the contract, and they have two options, right? They can either extend him or they can play the year out, because I don't personally think Brock Purdy is going to like take the year off and like hold out, right? Like, he's a seventh round draft pick guy in his third season. Like, he wouldn't hold out. That would be stupid. So I think if you're the 49ers, like, there has to be like a end to this high paying quarterback era where quarterbacks are getting paid 50 million, ridiculous amounts of money. So I think if you look at Purdy, who didn't have the best year, and it seems like when things kind of get tough, like injuries, just not having good games, he doesn't play the best. And, do you give him a deal like Baker Mayfield?
I could see them potentially giving a deal like Baker Mayfield. Like you said, I don't see him sitting out. I mean, he was the last draft pick in the entire draft, Mr. Irrelevant. But it'd be interesting to see, because if he, say for instance, right, he has another off year next year, do they even re-sign him? Because you look at the stretch that I know their backup is named Allen, because there was a whole thing about if Brock Purdy didn't play against the Bills, there was going to be a number 17 Allen throwing the number one Samuel on both sides. And during that stretch that he was playing, I think it was like 2 to 3 games, I think he didn't look so bad, but obviously I don't think he's starting quarterback material. I think you look at if Brock Purdy has an off year again next year, I think you look at the draft. So it'd be interesting to see. I think there's a lot of aspects that the 49ers need to do this offseason. But I think if he has another off year, I don't see the 49ers signing him. I mean, yes, they did go to a Super Bowl last year, but really they were a couple plays away from not even going to the Super Bowl. So we'll have to see kind of where that leads. Because as you mentioned, once the injuries came in for the 49ers, we saw the Brock Purdy that was the seventh round draft pick. We didn't see MVP candidate, Super Bowl runner up Brock Purdy. We saw the seventh round draft pick, Brock Purdy. So it'd be interesting to see.
We'll have to see the trajectory of where this team goes in the offseason. But transitioning into Sunday's games, I think there was a lot of games that you and I both were chatting about. And it was crazy. I mean, defenses were crazy, but for the first one, the first game, this was a big game, the Steelers versus the Eagles. You and I both talked about this is a real test for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Are they able to compete and maybe even win against a better team? And the short answer is no. This game felt one-sided. The Eagles completely stopped the run game as Najee Harris had, what was it, six attempts for 14 yards. I mean, that's insane. They completely shut down the run game. And when they did that, the game was kind of over.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks as an NFC fan, because obviously this game, it ties the Philadelphia Eagles with the Detroit Lions. Right now, the Lions do have the tiebreaker over the Eagles with NFC record. But I mean, we saw the drama that was happening between AJ Brown and Jalen Hurts going into this game, right? So that was a question for me, like, can these guys actually connect and beat the Pittsburgh Steelers? Because the Pittsburgh Steelers are not a pushover by any means. And I mean, we saw AJ Brown score a touchdown and go immediately to Jalen Hurts. So that looks good for Philadelphia. It was still kind of a decently close game. I mean, I think it was a 13-point game at the end of things, but it was a bigger test for what Pittsburgh can do rather than what Philadelphia can do against Pittsburgh.
Yeah, absolutely. That is a great point that you make there. It was a good game, as you said, for both A.J. Brown, Devonta Smith, both having over 100 yards and a pair of touchdowns, not pair each, but total together. So I want to ask you, do you think this game with the test that the Steelers, you know, just had, does this make them a early exit in your eyes for the playoffs?
I see why you bring that up because of the fact that we talked about it last week.
this is I think a follow-up. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think with how competitive the AFC is, obviously with the Chiefs, I mean, we don't know what's going on with Mahomes, obviously leaving the game early due to an ankle injury. And then you had like the Bills, the Ravens. I think the Chargers still have a shot to make the playoffs, the Broncos.
Yeah.
I could see them being a first round exit just with how competitive the AFC is in terms of those top teams. But I could see them upsetting a team like maybe the Ravens or even the Broncos, for example. But in terms of like if they have to face like the Bills or even the Chargers, yeah. I see them exiting pretty early.
Yeah, no, I was just looking right now. They're matched up right now against the Broncos after this week. So maybe they do get a win there. But I think, as you said, round two, I think it's if not round one, it's round two. That's my
yeah. I mean, the Broncos have been playing solid over the past couple of weeks. So I can't really say, yes, it's going to be a win for Pittsburgh or it's not. That would be in Pittsburgh, right?
Yeah, definitely. In Pittsburgh, I think.
So they might take that with it being in Pittsburgh. I think if yeah. it was in Denver, it'd be a different story. But overall, I think we're talking first or second round. I don't see them going to the AFC Championship.
Yeah.
And with that statement, I definitely do not think they're making it to the Super Bowl just with how top heavy the AFC is in terms of those other teams.
Yeah, it kind of seems like their problem really isn't you know, players necessarily. I mean, they do need another receiver, granted, and George Pickens was out of this game, but their adjustments, they don't have any adjustments, and that's mm-hmm. a big problem because if you are facing a team like the Eagles or a big team in the AFC, you're constantly having to adjust. And if the run game's not working, you got to get Russell Wilson, somebody else going, but they just cannot do that. So,
right.
But moving on to this next game, I mean, even though it was expected, the Bengals and Titans, there was just a lot here. I mean, in my opinion, I watched this one, sadly, there's nothing else on, but
mm-hmm.
I've seen enough of Will Levis.
For the memes, I still want Will Levis. For the memes, there was another meme that came out where I forget who it was. I think it was it Hendrickson that was standing right over him. I could be wrong on the player, but dude, for the Titans to have, I mean, we're talking about Will Levis, the guy that had his girlfriend break up with him because of the fact that he wasn't a first round draft pick. To the point where he is continuing to be the meme of the NFL. But I agree. I mean, I'm sick of seeing Will Levis as a football fan. I am sick of it. Because yeah. it's just you figure what he's going to do, right? He's going to try to do this acrobatic pass that's 9 times out of 10 going to get intercepted. Or he's going to flail around, not know what he's doing. Yeah, I mean, this guy's a joke.
Yeah, Joe Burrow, early in the game, did throw an interception. It was a bad ball. Just low to the ground, got scooped up by a linebacker on the Titans. And the Titans did go up 7-0 very quickly. And then just from there, it was like Will Levis was just not seeing different things, or receivers are running different routes, different pages, and he's just whipping them. And next, yeah. you know, it's 3 interceptions for him, and he's benched. I mean, it's pretty sad.
Yeah, I mean, with you saying like him not seeing things, it just takes me back to that zoom in video of him saying, "I didn't even see him." But yeah, I mean, Bengals going into this, I knew the Bengals were going to win. It was kind of questionable based on how the Bengals season has been going, kind of back and forth, but I overall knew that the Bengals were going to beat the Titans.
Yeah, and Joe Burrow, once again, had another great game. But despite the two interceptions, I mean, he almost had 300 yards. But Chase Brown, I mean, he's a huge factor of this Bengals offense. If it's not Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrow, but he's a great runner. I mean, watching him was special. I mean, the kid might be small, but he's fast. And he is making moves. I mean, he's something to watch, and he's a lot of fun. With that being said, the Bengals season still live, very, very slim. There's like the 5% chance they're in, if I'm not mistaken.
I think they have to win out and really
a lot of factors
depend on, yeah, like you said, a lot of factors. A lot of teams have to lose.
Yeah.
Yeah, but overall, they just have to win out. Like they need to focus on that. They need to focus on winning out. And then let everything else fall into place.
Right. So speaking of winning out and hopefully making the playoffs, we have the Dolphins and Texans. This game surprised me for many reasons. For one, the Texans yet again just do not seem to be putting up the points offensively. CJ Stroud, I mean, he's playing okay. He's not turning over the ball in this game, but – you know, 20 points to me just is not enough.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've talked about this before. You can't win a football game only winning 20 points.
Yeah.
And at the beginning of the season, we were like, Texans, they're putting up numbers. They're putting up stats. Obviously, going back a couple of weeks, they went up 23-7 against the Lions. But now it's like, I think obviously the injury to Nico Collins played a factor, him missing a lot of time, now having to come in, and obviously not having Stephon Diggs, that plays a huge factor. You were missing two of your top receivers for majority of the year. And now it's like Nico Collins has to get reacclimated into the system. Obviously, you have Tank Dell, who has been doing decently, not horribly. But they have to start getting their run game involved. They can't rely on CJ Stroud to just find little seams in the defense. They have to get their run game involved.
Yeah.
Plain and simple. Like,
yeah.
Looking at the Texans, it's so one-dimensional that 9 times out of 10, no matter what down it is, you figure they're going to pass the ball. So it's just, they need to do that. And I think if they do that going into the playoffs, because they haven't clinched it yet, but I feel like they are right there. And then,
yeah,
they just have to get the run game involved, like I said.
Yeah. On the flip side too, I mean, the Dolphins, at least I'm tired. I'm actually done with the Dolphins. I mean, I've given them chance after chance to change my mind about them. They just cannot win big games against big opponents. And, you know, first you and I were both saying how Tua can't play in the cold, and, you know, it is against a big team or a big opponent, but this game was indoors. So what's the excuse? And the Texans,
it in Houston too? Or am I wrong on that?
No, yeah, it was in Houston indoors.
Yeah.
So now it's like, well, what's the excuse here? I mean, Tua and Mike McDaniel, I'm done with it. They're bottom feeder team. They can beat everybody below them, but they will never go above that next level. So I'm done with them. Yeah.
Now, let me pose this question, because I asked one of my coworkers this, and I want to see if you have the right, I wouldn't say the right answer in my mind. but the same answer as he did. Is Mike McDaniel's seat getting hot?
Ooh, I think that you do have to look at him. I do think that Tua is another interesting, not I don't say problem because you just re-signed him.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some sort of disconnection going on between McDaniels and Tua, I think. And you do have to look at the coach always. And, you know, there's a reason for why the Dolphins, with all these weapons, Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, A-Chain, they can't beat these bigger teams. And it has to start with the coaching. So, yes.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, I even saw something on Instagram where it's like, I think it's ESPN or something. They post one sentence for each team, right? Like one thing that each team needs to do. And for the Dolphins, it's like, get rid of Mike McDaniel.
Now, I do think that, you know, his seat won't be mentioned this year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe some, you know, offseason speculation, or there might be some internal conversations. But I think obviously he'll be there next year. But if next year doesn't work out, I think then you have a real serious problem and he could be looked at. So
I agree. I think the earliest I could see him going is probably this offseason, whether it be like, I don't know. He's kind of a hothead, like getting involved with like an argument with Tua or something like that. But I think, as you said, if the Dolphins season is not successful next year, then I could see him even being let go mid-season, like we saw a couple other coaches this year, if not by the offseason next year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that wraps it up for the Dolphins-Texans game, unless you have any more final thoughts.
No, besides the fact that Tua did throw three interceptions this game.
Yeah, and also, you know, a quick note, shout out Derek Stingley, man. I mean, I didn't realize how good of a season he's actually having. I think I saw it was like 24 QB passer rating he's allowed. I forgot the other numbers, but they're really impressive. So I didn't realize what a season
he's having. I think he's only allowed like 17% completion percentage or something.
Yeah, it's insane. I didn't realize how great of a season
he flew under the radar.
Yeah. No, I mean, I knew he's a good corner. I just didn't realize the numbers he's actually really putting up. No one's really talking about it either. So that surprised me.
Yeah. And going into the next game, Colts versus Broncos. I mean, Colts came out 10-0 lead to start off. And I mean, going into this game, let me ask you this, because we didn't do predictions going into this week. Who did you have winning, Colts or Broncos?
Oh, I had the Broncos hands down in this game.
Yeah, I agree, because yes, the Colts have been like middle of the pack. Obviously, I think they're still second in the AFC South.
Yeah.
But I mean, the Broncos have been looking so strong in terms of offense, defense, even kind of special teams here and there. But what about Jonathan Taylor throwing the football?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why people are doing this. Like, they have to celebrate before they cross the goal line, and the ball, he flings it backwards, and it's a fumble. I mean, this happened this year in a Jets game, I believe. I just don't know why these players are making such stupid decisions. Like, it's not hard. Just go across the line. You know, make sure it's evident. I don't care. Touch the back of the end zone. Just make sure you're in. You know, people these days, I mean, the celebrations drive me crazy. I don't know why they have to do it. It's just like, come on. Just make the play.
I'll say this about the celebrations. I don't mind touchdown celebrations. It's the first down celebrations that get me pissed off.
You gained 10 yards. Yeah, act like you've been there. Right, yeah, act like you've been there. But nonetheless, though, I mean, if you know, Jonathan Taylor is a great player, great running back. But someone like him doing that, that's unbelievable, because, you know, in college this happens all the time. You know, you're like, oh, some 19-year-old kid, 20-year-old kid crosses the line, does it, celebrates too early. You're like, oh, that's expected. But Jonathan Taylor,
that's, I mean, that's Jonathan Taylor, what, he's 25, 26, give or take. I believe so. Yeah. But he's been in the league for a while now. And for him to do something like that, I mean, just call it boneheaded. I feel like he definitely had a conversation after the game, or at least after that play. But you just got to be smarter. Like you said, just make sure you're in the end zone. Like, even touch the field goal post if you have to.
Yeah.
Like, it, you just need to guarantee that you scored the touchdown before you do any sort of celebration. Even like people doing like the high stepping before they get into the end zone.
Right.
It's like, then you have the situation where you can be tackled at the 1 yard line. You can have the ball knocked out of your hand.
Right.
Like, make sure you secure that touchdown before you do any sort of celebration.
Right. You know, you just don't want to put yourself in these situations, because like that might have just single-handedly ruined their season.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, on the flip side though, Bo Nix did not have the greatest game, 3 interceptions. But the Broncos, I mean, he did manage to storm back and come back with 3 touchdowns, and one touchdown, I believe, was a Donnie Mitchell, wide receiver for the Colts. Little pass back and forth between him and Richardson. He throws it back to Richardson, and it gets picked off for 6. I mean, yeah. That's just, I don't know.
Some of these teams doing trick plays, I mean, you have to have the right situation to do these trick plays. And clearly, just doing it to do it is not a good recipe.
Yeah. I mean, also too, Anthony Richardson, he is just not, I thought first year rookie season, he had potential before he got injured, but he's been awful since.
Yeah. And you know, I went to the Indianapolis versus Detroit game.
Yeah.
I was over here saying like, put Joe Flacco in. And everyone's like, he's horrible. I was like, Anthony Richardson's not much better.
No, Joe Flacco's a competitor, but yeah, Richardson's been terrible this season.
Yeah, I mean, at least you got to say, like, his rookie year, yes, we all felt like he had potential, right?
He's
in his second season now. He should be getting acclimated to the NFL, the speed of the game. I think either he's thinking way too fast or he's just thinking way too slow. And I don't know which one it is. Normally I can pinpoint how the player is playing, if they're thinking too fast, doing things too quickly, but I can't with Anthony Richardson. I just have no clue what is going on with him. He is not doing good at all this season.
Yeah. Which is really disappointing, because I thought he had a great potential, or upscale ceiling rather. But going into the next game, this game, you know, Nick, I'm going to let you have the floor in a minute. I just want to get my key points, because I know you'll have a lot to say. We got the Bills and the Lions here. Great game, great showdown. But first, I just want to say that this game finally exposed the Lions' injuries. You know, the Bills, obviously a great team, Super Bowl contender. They went up 14-0 fast, and they had a game plan. I even texted you this. It looked like they had a really good game plan to put pressure on Jared Goff, and they shut down the run game a bit. So they did a bit of everything right, and it did work out in their favor, because they were up 14-0 fast and then just went toe-to-toe with the Lions, and they ended up winning. They had control of this game for the most part, but the takeaways, though, are insane. I mean, Goff played a great game. Josh Allen played a great game. This was just a great game overall. So I'll let you have the floor now.
Yeah. I mean, I even tweeted out that this game showed how injured our defense was. One thing that kind of pissed me off was you look at the snap count percentage for players like Za'Darius Smith, Jack Campbell. Jack Campbell only played 23% of the snaps. Za'Darius Smith only played 43% of the snaps. And a lot of times we were playing zone against Josh Allen, and that is something really you can't do. We were playing a 4-3 zone with a cover two. Make that make sense, please. But I mean, the injuries definitely played a factor into this game, not having people like Hutchinson, Anzalone, Rodriguez, even like players like Derek Barnes. But I would say one thing too. The only two losses that the Lions had, both times Jared Goff had to throw over 50 times. I believe he was 36 for 52 with 498 and 5 touchdowns, I believe. It's still a solid game out of him, but obviously the run game, now hearing that David Montgomery is out for the season with an MCL tear, Aleem McNeil out for the season, Carlton Davis is out for 6 weeks with a fractured jaw. And now hearing that the Lions have signed Anthony Pittman, former Lion, as well as Jerry Jacobs, former Lion. So getting players that are acclimated into the system could be a good thing. But I think this game just completely exposed Aaron Glenn as a defensive coordinator. He had zero game plan for Josh Allen and the Bills. He was definitely able to contain both Amari Cooper and Keon Coleman. Amari Cooper with zero receptions. Keon Coleman with one reception for 61 yards. But Aaron Glenn was exposed as a defensive coordinator. I would not put this game on people like Dan Campbell, Ben Johnson. The offense as a whole, I think, can carry this team to like a lot of wins, right? If you score 42 points in an NFL game, you should win the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
I do feel like this will be the Super Bowl matchup, in my opinion. And hearing now that Ifeatu Melifonwu is coming back, he's starting practice this week. Derek Barnes is expected to start practice next week. Anzalone, Hutchinson is saying he will be back for the Super Bowl if the Lions make it. He was seen walking into the stadium, kneeling down. Everything is looking good with him. But I feel like it's definitely a big hit on the offense to lose a player like David Montgomery for the rest of the season. They did say that if he did not come back into the game in the fourth quarter, he would have avoided much bigger injury. I think this season, when you look down upon it, right, obviously right now, 12-2, they won 11 straight games with those injuries, and beating teams, competitive teams like the Vikings, the Packers, the Texans, they were able to beat these teams. But against a team like the Bills, you really need a strong defense. And I was saying to one of my coworkers today, there was three key points that the defense really needed to do. Contain Josh Allen in the pocket, stop the run, and keep everything in front of you. And they were not able to do any of them. Now losing Carlton Davis and Aleem McNeil, those are big hits for the defense. Now you're going to see Tarrion Arnold move into that CB1 spot. So it's going to be interesting to see what he does. And then, obviously, like I said, Ifeatu Melifonwu coming back. So we'll see him acclimated here. Probably not this week, but probably against the 49ers. And I would assume probably against the Vikings, because I feel like that week 18 matchup is really going to determine the NFC North. On the flip side, though, with the Bills, great game out of them, obviously starting up 14-0. Their defense was able to stop the run. Obviously, David Montgomery finishing with 4 yards is not normal for him. And Jahmyr Gibbs, I mean, they were able to stop him, contain him, really get him to not push to the outside, because Jahmyr Gibbs is one of those guys that can beat pretty much everybody outside. Once he gets outside, of the numbers, he's basically unbeatable. They were able to keep him inside, contain him a lot. And the offensive line for the Lions needs to hold up a little bit better. Jared Goff was under pressure a lot this game. And I think that's a testament to the Bills' defense overall. The Bills, like you said, came out with a game plan. Their offensive game plan was just go fast, fast, fast. Really expose the Lions' defense. But it'd be interesting to see if this is the Super Bowl matchup, potentially seeing Hutch coming back and a bunch of these other players that I named. So we'll have to see. Obviously, Bills, great team. Lions, I would still say, are a great team. Obviously, 12-2. But like I said multiple times this year, defense wins championships. And that is something that the Lions need to focus on. I think it really starts with Aaron Glenn. He just looked lost as a defensive coordinator. But that's enough of me rambling about this game. Any final thoughts on this game from you?
Yeah, I actually want to ask you a question. So let's just say the defense is in the spot that it's in right now, you know, banged up, pieces are missing, and, you know, you have second, third stringers in. And let's say they are in the playoffs, right? Well, they're going to be in the playoffs. If they're in this position right now, do you think that – do you have faith in them still going to the Super Bowl despite their defensive situation?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so too.
I think their defense is in a place, yes, it's banged up, but – they were going up against the number two offense in the league this past week.
Right, right.
So I think that plays a factor. The fact that Josh Allen is most likely going to be the MVP. He was able to run the ball, pass the ball. And the fact that they were able to shut down Amari Cooper and Keon Coleman, I think says a lot about this team.
Yeah.
And the fact that they are 12-2 in this situation, obviously Hutch, big player for the team, but he hasn't played since week six. And they've been able to still win against, obviously, like I said, the Packers, the Vikings, the Texans, even teams like the Colts somewhat, and the Bears, obviously, division rivals. It's always going to be competitive.
Yeah.
And to be able to hold teams off like that has been a testament to them. But I think going into these games, Aaron Glenn has to have a game plan. He can't just be like, we're playing man-to-man defense and blitzing. It can't be that. Because I think when you start just only doing that, teams are going to catch on big time. Like, he has to have a game plan. And like I said, the three key factors are keeping ex-quarterback in this situation, Josh Allen, in the pocket, get pressure on him. Don't have your star players only playing 20% of snaps like Jack Campbell and Za'Darius Smith. Stop the run, contain the run, and keep everything in front of you. Like, those are the three key things that you need to do on defense, and they weren't able to execute. Obviously, I've also been saying this all season. The players have to execute. But and when it's a terrible game plan, the players are having to execute a terrible game plan. And Terrion Arnold came out and said, we have to communicate better as a defense. So now we need to see players step up and be that vocal leader. I could see a player like Jack Campbell doing it, potentially a Za'Darius Smith. I prefer it to be a linebacker, so probably Jack Campbell, or even like a Quan Alexander can do it because he's been in that role as a captain on a defense. I can even see in the secondary maybe like a Brian Branch or Kirby Joseph being that vocal leader. That's what this defense needs because the game plans are going to come, right? They need to come. But you need that vocal leader that could be able to see the offense and be able to have the other players adapt to what that offense is doing.
Yeah. I mean, fully agree with you. We definitely spent a lot of time on that game. But we're going to move
on. I feel like this game we could spend a lot of time too. This upcoming game that we're talking about.
This next game, we're going to talk about my Green Bay Packers, except I promise I will not be talking that much. There was quite a few things I took away from this game. Obviously, the Packers came out swinging 14-0. It was just a first quarter. I'm going to hand the ball off to Josh Jacobs, and you're going to have to stop the run. And if they couldn't do that, the Packers just kept on marching down the field and, you know, stuffing it down their throat. They went up 14-0 fast. Josh Jacobs once again continues to be the dominant forefront for this Packers offense. So if Jordan Love doesn't have to throw the ball, he can just hand it off to Josh Jacobs, which is phenomenal. But the Packers defense again, you know, it was the against the Lions, against the Dolphins, the pressure. How can the Packers defense create pressure? And they absolutely did that. They got 7 sacks on Geno Smith and Sam Howell. Unfortunately, on a hit, Geno Smith went out and he didn't return to the game. But 7 times. I mean, that's kind of crazy.
Yeah, and I think there is speculation that Geno Smith will be out the remainder of the – at least the regular season. They are saying potential playoffs that he comes back. But that – like at – it hasn't been confirmed yet. But yeah, as you said, 7 sacks against Geno Smith and Sam Howell. The offensive line for the Seahawks has always been a question, right? Yeah. We know they have weapons like DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Kenneth Walker. We know that they have these weapons. It's about that offensive line. I think we've touched on it. We've, in terms of offensive lines, we've mainly touched on the Bears, to be fair, of how bad their offensive line is. But I think the Seahawks, if they want any sort of shot, because the NFC West is still very competitive, right? With the Rams, the Cardinals, 49ers, I don't see them doing anything the rest of the season. But you look at the Rams, Cardinals, and Seahawks at least, it's still a very competitive division, right? And we kind of know what teams are kind of going to be in the wild card right now as of today, right? We know whether it's the Lions or the Vikings that win the NFC North, we know the opposite's going to be in the wild card. We at least probably know that the Packers are going to be a wild card team. And then potentially that NFC East, I'm thinking Washington might sneak in. If not another team from the NFC West. But I think for the Seahawks to have any sort of shot in the playoffs, they need to have their offensive line get better, right? I'm not saying fit new pieces in. I'm not saying that. I'm saying they need to get better protection schemes going. Cause it's just the same old thing that they're doing and it's not working. They haven't switched it.
Yeah. I was surprised that they didn't get Kenneth Walker going in this game, or I'm sorry. Not Kenneth Walker. Who's their backup? Charbonnet.
Charbonnet.
I'm surprised that he didn't get going in this game. They kind of just, you know, as you said, they wanted to pass it a lot and that kind of surprised me. I know they're kind of a pass heavy team, but you know, I thought they do have a good running backs rather. So that kind of surprised me. Another thing too, is the Seahawks run a 5-game winning streak. I don't know before coming into this game, if you knew that or not. That kind of surprised me because I knew they were playing solid football. I didn't realize they were on a 5-game.
I thought they were on like a 3-3. To be honest.
It wasn't really big. So this was big for them because they're still, as you said, now fighting for first place in the NFC West. But going back to the Packers, I mean, their draft class, insane last year. They have a great – I mean, obviously the first round they took the offensive tackle on Jordan Morgan, but he's injured. So then the second round they took Adrian Cooper, and I like this pick a lot. I mean, he showed it tonight – or last night, rather. He's just versatile, fast. you know, get to the ball carrier. You know, yeah. Tackling was efficient. Interception. I mean, he did it all last night. He really showed he's going to be a star for this Green Bay Packers team, which I hope, because their linebacker core has not been great. You know, it's against the Lions, the game plan for the Packers, or where the Packers were getting beat, was over the linebackers, but just in front of the safeties. So, you know, there's no help there. And that was the problem. So finally having a player who is versatile that you can move across the field, just so helpful. I mean, but obviously with the Packers game, it's not always great, because in the second half, they got complacent. They started going 3-and-out, and it was like, what is going on? You know, this is not the first half team. You know, we're playing complimentary football at first, and now we're just going 3-and-out. You know, there's got to be another plan besides hand the ball off to Josh Jacobs, because he's eventually going to get stuffed. And when you just want to waste time being up by so much, I mean, you do allow things to happen, like the fumble that happened, you know, the Seahawks to climb back in the game. So, you know, Matt LaFleur's kind of got to get better with that.
Yeah, and I think we touched on it a couple weeks ago, where the Packers seem to like to first and second down just hand the ball off to Josh Jacobs. And we did see that this game. Obviously, Josh Jacobs was able to, that first half, especially the first half, he was just able to break tackles, get through the hole, and get a lot of yardage, first downs, everything, right? That second half, I think they still tried to do that, but I think they tried forcing it more instead of it just being fluid. And I feel like that is going to be, because the Packers offense overall, great offense, right? They're a young team. Their defense, right? Their defense has been really solid, getting turnovers. And I feel like Josh Jacobs, you look at his yardage compared to his carries, he has a good average, right? But he does get a lot of carries, right? I think he's, what, in the 200s or like well above that right now in terms of carries on the season. I think he has the second most, if not the most, carries out of any running back in the league. So defense is going to prepare for that, especially going into playoffs. They're going to be expecting, okay, they're going to hand the ball off to Josh Jacobs, right? And we aren't seeing a lot of play action from Jordan Love. So I think if you start to acclimate first, like even like a first down play action, right? That can get the defense guessing. And I feel like that can be the difference maker for the Packers.
Yeah, no, because as you said, I think there was a 4th-and-1. I think the Packers went for it, and Seahawks just, they just full blitzed, and Leonard Williams came across the edge and just tackled Josh Jacobs behind the line of scrimmage. So, you know, as you said, it gets predictable. It's just going to be predictable. So, I mean, however, Jordan Love did play pretty well, very efficient. 2 touchdowns to Romeo Doubs. He had some great catches. But yeah, I mean, overall, this was a great win. Packers needed it. I mean, the Seahawks needed it too. But the Packers held the Seahawks at 13 points. So I'm pretty happy with this win. Next week, the Packers play the Saints. So that should be, you know, an easy one at home. So they're in a good situation right now.
Yeah. And then going into the final game that we're going to be talking about is the game of the week. the Falcons versus the Raiders.
Yeah, so there's 2 Monday night games. Great night for the NFL, by the way. Vikings and Bears and Falcons and Raiders, gee. But I want to share this headline with you, Nick, because I thought it was just so insane to me. I want to get your thoughts on it. Mm-hmm. So the headline I read was, Cousins and the Falcons do just enough to beat the Raiders 15-9. That to me is a joke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, obviously, I believe it was Max Crosby didn't even play, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right? I think he's injured.
Wow. I didn't even know that, to be honest. I kind of was, you know, going in and out of this game.
I mean, I watched a little bit and I didn't even see Max Crosby. And then I saw on TikTok, there's this guy that does the injury demon.
Mm-hmm.
And he had Max Crosby go in. So my guess is he is injured and he didn't even play this game.
Yeah, he's been out. Yeah. So, you know, 15-9, I was like, oh, the Falcons should have this game. The Raiders secondary is worse than who did they play last week? The Falcons.
Oh, the Vikings.
Man. It was the Vikings. When I'm trying to think. I thought the Falcons were going to have this game. I don't remember who I was talking to or what I was comparing to, but yeah, I thought they were going to destroy the Raiders. I mean, hands down. But that just wasn't the case.
Yeah, I mean, the Falcons did not get Darnell Mooney involved. Zero catches for zero reception or 0 yards. So I feel like that is a huge factor, the fact that they didn't get him involved. Played a factor in them barely winning, especially if the Raiders don't have Max Crosby, who has kind of been their carry to keep them at least close in games. But I'm at a point where it's just like, start Michael Penix, him already. Please. Because I think you mentioned that you went back and watched our first episode. Right, our first couple of episodes, I did the same thing, right? And we were saying maybe middle of the year he might come in. Maybe we might see him like in these garbage time games, right?
He should have played today or last night.
He should have played last night. He should have been playing maybe against Minnesota. Obviously, it was a revenge game for Kirk Cousins, but I mean, I'm at a point where it's just like, you need to start Michael Penix. You need to reevaluate how much you paid Kirk Cousins, because he has not been good. He has not been the four-year, $280 million quarterback that you signed him to be. He has not been that.
Yeah. I mean, I was talking to somebody, and a good point was, do the Falcons play to the level of their competitors? Because legitimately looking at it, I mean, like, dude, okay, yeah, the Vikings game, they just completely got – they were competing with them, and then they just fell off because of Kirk Cousins. I mean, the Chargers game was close. They got obliterated by the Broncos. But the Buccaneers, they beat the Buccaneers twice. It's like, that's a good team. They're 8-6. The Bucs are 8-6.
Right.
So it's just interesting because – you know, when they did say that, I was like, do they really play to the level of their competitors? I mean,
I think it's a valid statement. Honestly, it'd be interesting to see that statement against teams like the Packers, the Lions. Obviously, yeah. We saw with the Vikings, but it'd be very interesting to see that if that statement holds up against some of these like powerhouses of the NFC, like even put Philadelphia in there.
Yeah.
Like it'd be interesting because if they play to the level of their competition, imagine them playing against like Philadelphia, Detroit,
right.
Green Bay. It'd be very interesting to see a 70 point game.
Yeah. Right? I mean, Kirk has like been on a downhill lately, and that's obviously their problem. 11 for 17, 117 yards, I think it was. I mean, they're just putting themselves in bad situations. I mean, first down, they're not getting many yards with Bijan. Penalties, you know, Kirk's fumbling the ball, putting themselves in third and long situations, and they cannot convert. I don't know how many third downs they converted last night, but it wasn't many. They were punting the ball so much.
Three or four for 12 or something like that. I could be wrong on the stat.
Not to mention too, they were in great field positioning for most of the game. Yeah. I mean, how does that even happen?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to pose a question to you, and I don't know how you feel about it, but do you think that the fact that Kirk Cousins was injured all of last year plays a factor in how poorly he is playing this year?
No. I think that because we've seen great games from him. We've seen him be at his best against the Buccaneers. You know, we've seen him, you know, just compete. And there are just things in the in these games that just are not going right, whether it's him, whether it's, you know, penalties, something just not going right on this offense.
Okay, do you think it's a coaching issue? Or do you think it's, like, solely Kirk Cousins needs to go or needs to get benched?
You know, he's also having receivers drop passes too, which I saw last night too. I mean, I don't know. They just – maybe it is a coaching thing or an offensive coordinator thing. I mean, they just got to figure something out because Kirk is realistically on a one-year deal here because that money's guaranteed. And then the 2 years after that, they can get rid of him if the year doesn't go right and start Michael Penix. So we'll see. We'll see what happens next year.
Now – one final question, and then I think we can end it on that. Do you think, because we were questioning at the beginning of the year, Michael Penix getting drafted, I think it was eighth overall to Atlanta, obviously with Kirk Cousins signing that four-year, $280 million deal. Do you think because of that one-year guarantee, if this year did not pan out for Kirk Cousins, that maybe they see what happens next year and straight up just cut him if it doesn't happen and then just start Michael Penix? Do you think that kind of played a factor into them drafting Michael Penix? Because they also had Desmond Ridder.
Right, as they got rid of him, yeah.
But the fact that they – so they drafted Michael Penix, right? I think – I could be wrong. I think it was eighth overall, right?
Yeah.
They have Kirk Cousins, four-year, $280 million deal, one-year money guaranteed. Then obviously those next couple years are optional, right? Do you think the reason why they drafted him, eighth overall, is because going into the season, they knew Kirk Cousins is coming off a horrible injury, that they wanted to see how this year and potentially next year goes?
Yeah, yeah.
And then get rid of Kirk Cousins. Do you think that's the reason why they drafted Michael Penix so high?
Yeah, I think that Michael Penix was kind of like a safety blanket for the Falcons. I think that they had a vision and a guy first round who they're like, okay, we do need a quarterback. And they did go get Kirk. They did do that. And then, but the flip side to it is, if Kirk doesn't work out, like you, like what the contract is, 2 years are guaranteed money. So you do have to have Kirk for those 2 years and play it out just in case you do make it to the playoffs. And right now they are. So their draft pick won't be that high. So Michael Penix was kind of like a safety blanket because they did have a vision on him. But that's why they took him eighth overall. So they kind of took him to, for their future. I mean, they had a vision 2 years ago, and that's who they believe is their guy 2 years later. So,
yeah, I can agree with that. But that's going to be it for this week's episode. Kind of a long one, a lot of things to talk about. The next couple of weeks, we will not be having any episodes due to the holidays and spending time with family. So don't expect episodes for the next 2 weeks. But with that being said, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year from us at Gridiron Podcast to you guys. Go spend some time with your families. And you guys can expect episodes on Thursdays. Follow us on Twitter at Gridiron Pod NFL. Follow us on Spotify and Amazon Music. And subscribe to the YouTube. More shorts will be coming out sporadically. And yeah, thank you guys for tuning in. We'll see you guys in the next episode. Peace.